Hello, and welcome back to the 3 a.m. Mystery Club podcast. I'm Brandon, and one time I made Derek ask CCH Pounder if she was Esapetha Murkerson.
Hola, Tannerinos. Bienvenida a nuestro programa.
I'm Derek, and my favorite episode of Shelley Duvall's Fairy Tale Theater is Cinderella. What's yours?
Okay, so it's Rowena tonight, and I think we're ready to go.
This is sort of a part two concerning the case I did on February 9th of Judith Lynn Petty. I was able to speak with her sister, who is also the family's spokesperson, as it were. And she was able to answer some questions we had on the first episode. And I'm pretty excited to share all the stuff she revealed. So you guys ready?
Ready.
Okay, here we go. So a little backstory. On February 9th, 2021, we published an episode titled Everyone's Aunt Judy. What I thought would be an interesting local case has opened my eyes to something that gets a lot deeper than a simple cold case. Before we start, I need to give props to my coworker Tina for printing out and handing me this vague article in the Parkersburg News and Sentinel that featured a picture of a smiling, bright-eyed woman whose future was taken away so tragically. Because that little article with almost no follow-up, no details, no internet trace at all, has turned into probably a case that's going to haunt me for a long time. So, shortly after that episode, I was able to get in touch with Kelly Poyani, who is Judy's sister. And I asked her a few questions that we had. And I want to say, first off, that Kelly has lived this nightmare, her family's nightmare, for over a decade now. And she, in living this nightmare every day, she has her facts down. Every question I asked, she answered immediately with full detail. She is a well-spoken lady. She knows her stuff. And she is determined to get this case out into the world to get some justice for her sister. So I hope that in doing this podcast and this write-up I have done on her behalf, that we can accomplish some movement in this case. So the first question I asked her, I said, on February 6th, Judy was seen at the Parkersburg Wood County Library returning some books. Could you walk us through a timeline of events from that evening? And Kelly's response was, yes, Judy was the caretaker for our grandmother, who was 94 years old. On February 6th, around 5 p.m., Judy asked our sister Wanda to watch our grandmother while she returned some things to the library. Judy wasn't feeling well, but like me, she liked to take walks when she wasn't feeling well to sort of re-energize herself. By 6:30 p.m., she hadn't returned, so Wanda called her daughter, Judy's niece, who lived near the library, to see if she'd seen Judy. Judy was close to all of her nieces and nephews, so it wouldn't have been unusual for her to stop by and visit. And Michelle, the niece, hadn't seen or heard from her, and we were concerned because Judy was diabetic and needed her medications. This worried Wanda, who started calling up the rest of our family, and no one had seen or heard from Judy. Everyone started driving around town in different directions looking for her. My sister Cheryl ran into a police officer and mentioned Judy was diabetic and needed her medication and that we hadn't heard from her all evening. The police officer helped look for her, and by 10 p.m., the family filled out a missing persons report. Of course, we got some pushback because we were filing a report on an adult and it was still a little early and wouldn't be considered a missing person case until 24 to 48 hours had passed. Now, I'm going to pause in the interview right there and just mention that if you're not familiar with Judy's case, I really urge you to go back and listen to that episode. It's pretty detailed, and I'll give a quick recap now. Judy was a middle-aged woman who was the caregiver for her grandmother. She took a walk into the little town of Parkersburg to return some library books and was never seen again. Later, her body was found in a burnt-out building that was on the family's property. And to further make this case hard, her remains were then mixed up with another family's remains that had also been involved in a fire around the same time. There was also some trouble getting this case deemed a homicide. And because of all these events, Judy's case went cold. And every year on the anniversary of her death, her sister reaches out to media outlets and likes to retell the story to get it out there. And that's how I learned about this case. So that's your quick little recap before we dive into this a little further. So back to the interview. As Kelly likes to report, during the initial search, my dad drove out to the family farm, but we all thought, well, that's a long walk, but it was Judy's favorite place, so maybe she could go out there. Dad drove out different pathways looking for her. Now, Dad is a hunter, and it was cold and rainy that night, but he drove out there looking for footprints, but didn't see anything. Being a hunter, he knew that if he didn't see any footprints from the gate to the hill leading up to the house, that Judy probably wouldn't be there. He drove back into town thinking we were looking in the wrong direction. The next day, February 7th, my dad went back to the farm and decided to check out the house and buildings in the daylight. He got there to find everything on fire. The house, the cellar house, the garage, and the outbuildings. This was before everyone had cell phones, so he ran to a neighbor's house to call the fire department, his family, and the police. When the authorities got there, they didn't rope anything off or treat it as a crime. The family farm is 108 acres. It's less than a mile from the road to the house, but the driveway is long, and when Dad got back up there from the neighbors, he said the fire was in all directions, burning everything, and that it looked like a war zone. When the fire department came, my family begged them to put out the fires, but they declined, saying they would let it burn out and then do a search because they couldn't get to a water source. My sisters pointed out that we had a pond and that they could hook into the pond water, but the fire department disagreed. There were 13 family members present by the time the fire got out of control, plus the fire chief, a sergeant from the police force, and a fire investigation team with cadaver dogs. My dad gave them a layout of the house and where Judy might have been. I should mention that nobody lived on the farm anymore, but my whole family went there all the time to relax and spend time together. Once the fire died out in the house, they began to search for remains, which crushed us all. They didn't find remains in the house, but the cadaver dogs kept going to the cellar house. Unfortunately, it was too hot for them to get too close. Once the fire was out and it was safe, officials searched the cellar house and the family was there as they started pulling up bone fragments. The pieces were so small, you couldn't tell if they were human or animal. Then they brought up a finger with some flesh on it and a tooth and a skull with a crack in it. There wasn't enough there to ID immediately, but we knew in our hearts it was Judy. The fire department asked us to leave because it would be too hard on us to see anymore. So that's the Petty family's account of Judy's disappearance and how her remains were discovered. What I learned happened afterwards is just insane. And I'm just going to relay it in third person as Kelly told it to me, because unfortunately our recording, the call or the app I had to record dropped after this part of the conversation. So here it goes. According to Kelly, the family left the farm to let authorities continue their work. A few days later, Judy's dad returned to the property and found a set of footprints near untouched parts of the farm, specifically at the gate and near the crime scene. They were too big to be Judy's. They reported the findings to the sheriff's department, but to their knowledge, there was no follow-up. On Valentine's Day, February 14th, Judy's remains were positively identified through her tooth. A sergeant with the sheriff's department admitted to the family that, quote, the fire looked fishy and that he would have to step on some toes, end quote, to turn this into a homicide investigation. Other unbelievable mishaps during the initial investigation also occurred. The sheriff's department never used the forensic kit they usually have on hand because they did not believe the fire or Judy's death were suspicious. Judy's remains were not immediately sent to the coroner's office, and once they were mixed up with the remains of a young girl who had also died in the fire. The family didn't know about the mix-up until it was reported in local newspapers and media. The DHHR, Department of Health and Human Resources, issued an apology and a promise to have the Smithsonian Institute look at Judy's remains. This never happened, and the family never got an answer as to how Judy's scant remains were mixed up with that of a child. Investigators also never did anything with the crime scene, citing that the rain and snow would make efforts to recover any evidence useless. Now, I want to mention here that I spoke with our own forensic expert. Yes, we have those on tap, by the way.
I love that.
See, Rose got some resources. And this expert, who will remain anonymous because they do work in the field within the United States, said that while fire and weather could contribute to little or no evidence yielded, that evidence should have been collected regardless because even the smallest thing could end up being a big break. So eventually, with a new sheriff elected, the Petty family hired a lawyer and Judy's remains were exhumed and sent to Marshall University, where a specific type of CO2 or carbon monoxide test determined that Judy had been alive prior to the fire and could be ruled a homicide. Now, I researched this specific CO2 test to see how it could determine whether this was a homicide. And according to acutecaretesting.org, less than 1 to 2% of a COHB normally is present in the blood for a normal, healthy person, just, you know, breathing normal air. Increased levels of this compound are largely due to fires, vehicle exhaust, and deliberate exposure in small spaces employed by those with suicidal intent. So, like, people who try to commit suicide with, you know, their car exhaust, that type of thing.
That's crazy that a test can determine that.
It really is. In a case study cited on acutecaretesting.org, if the person had been dead before a fire, they could not have inspired, which means breathed in, CO2, and the postmortem COHB would have been close to the normal limits. So that would mean in Judy's, whatever remains they tested, her COHB would have been within normal limits. And that is how they determined that she was dead before the fire started. Once Judy's death was deemed a homicide, the Petty family still had to use a lawyer to get an official death certificate. The local prosecutor also dropped the ball on the family, reporting to them that while they could possibly bring someone in, they don't have an evidential case at this point. It's all circumstantial and hearsay. Desperate for justice to be served, the Petty family reached out to the FBI and a volunteer cold case organization known as VIDOCS to intervene. Both organizations have agreed to step in, but cannot do so without invitation from the Wood County Sheriff's Office. Neither have received an invitation. When asked why the press haven't jumped all over this case, Kelly told me that she has spoken with local papers at length, but at press time, only general and vague reports are printed. When the family asks, they are told that the story must be run by the sheriff's department for approval first. When the family threatened to take Judy's case national, they were strongly advised against it by local officials and warned to be careful about talking too much. Now, whether that was a threat or just them worrying about compromising the case, I don't know. Kelly seems to infer that the tone was a little ominous when being told this, but she also never specifically said if it was in reference to the possibility of compromising the case or if they just wanted the family to be quiet. She does say that it feels like the officials just want the family to go away and to drop it because it's been so long.
That's what it sounds like to me. To me, there's not anything that they know of that could compromise the case. Like, that's just basic information. It really seems to me like they're just really pushing it aside. And I remember after you presented the case the first time, I was reading up on it, and I told you how the Parkersburg newspaper did like this really small story about the anniversary of the death. It was basically just, oh, today's the day that, you know, she died. And there was like no details. And I remember thinking it was because they didn't do their job, but it turns out it was the police telling them they couldn't say anything else. And I just think that's so bizarre. And it's not helping the case at all.
Yeah. And, you know, when I researched this case, the most details I got from it initially before speaking with Kelly, I got from the family's Facebook page and from Judy's obituary. I mean, like, I went back from the first year it happened all the way up until 2012, and it was just the same scant article over and over and over again. Like, I couldn't even piece together, like, you know, details from the first year to details of this year because it was just the exact same print.
Crazy. And that's you know, and then sadly, that happens a lot. It often comes down to the families having to keep things alive. And I'm glad that her family is dedicated to doing that. And I hope that, you know, we can help in any way that we can.
Yeah, I hope this case gets some traction and some shares and people to just talking about it would help. I mean, even if you're not from Wood County, West Virginia, just circulating the case and talking about it helps. So to continue with the interview, when it comes to tips about Judy's disappearance and death, a neighbor who lived near the farm admits to overhearing someone mention they saw Judy being dropped off at the farm. The police did try to follow up on this, but they were unsuccessful in finding a vehicle that matched the description they were given.
It was a neighbor, you said, that saw this?
Yes.
Interesting.
Let me tell you, I was dumbfounded by this information. Again, as I mentioned before, Kelly, I found her to be intelligent, articulate, full of facts about this case. And she and her family, she says she wakes up every day and just relives this specific weekend over and over and over again. The entire family has been traumatized by this case. And I really don't know what it's going to take to get this case investigated by higher authorities because they have to be invited in by the county sheriff's department. And that is just, it doesn't seem like that's going to happen anytime soon.
I just had a theory pop into my head, and I don't like to do this too much, especially with a case like this, because, excuse me, we clearly don't know what happened. But hearing that a neighbor allegedly saw her being dropped off at the farmhouse, is it possible that she was dropped off and somebody that should not have been at inside the farmhouse was there?
And you know, that is a good theory. Maybe there were some squatters or something there and she just caught them unaware.
That's what I was thinking.
I mean, because that happens a lot in this area.
Right.
So that is a good theory, though. So as this interview wrapped up, because Kelly is also, she's taking care of her husband who is now suffering some ill health, and she had to get off the phone with me. We spent probably about 45 minutes to an hour together. She was very easy to talk to. I wanted her to leave us with a positive note about Judy. And so this is her her final thoughts on Judy. Judy had a heart of gold. She was so funny and loved her sisters. She spoiled her nieces and nephews. Judy once said she'd like to have at least 10 kids, and she got that with all of her nieces and nephews. We grieve for everything this beautiful, lighthearted, and funny soul has missed because she was taken so early. Now, if you have any information regarding the homicide of Judith Lynn Petty, please call the Wood County Sheriff's Department tip line at area code 304-424-1834. When I talked to our forensic person, they said they run into this kind of thing, especially with small town police, all the time. And that they really, really needed to push better basic forensics training with especially sheriff's departments and county police, because a lot of it is that they just don't know what the procedure is and that you should do those things every time you come up on something. And where she works in the state she works, which I'm not going to name, they have actually started a statewide initiative that all police get basic forensics training, like how to rope off a crime scene, how to not compromise evidence, and how to safely gather evidence if there's a chance that it could be compromised before a forensics team could get there.
And at what point do the state police and FBI get involved in cases? Is that just because this is not like, I don't know, it wasn't even thought of to be a murder at first, right?
Right. And there was a fire marshal from the state that present at the crime scene. And had they deemed it maybe an arson at the time, the state police could have stepped in along with the fire marshal. But I guess because it wasn't deemed a homicide immediately, it stayed within the county.
I'm sorry if you've already said this, but is there a record of her having been to the library?
Yes, because she returned her items.
Okay, she returned them. I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
I can only imagine how frustrating it is for the newspaper and the other outlets around there to not be able to get any information from the police on this. There's a part of me that, as an actual trained journalist, that makes me wonder why they care. They don't have to listen to the police. There's Freedom of Information Act and everything, First Amendment, all these things that protect them. So I wonder what the deal is. I would just be all over this case if I was local and working for a media outlet.
I know I would too. And I'm not even a trained journalist, but I'm like, what is the deal here? And the only thing my mind goes to, and I mean, even I'm kind of afraid to say it, and I'm not even in that county, but I'm adjacent to that county, is it's got to be political. I mean, or maybe they're afraid of retaliation or something.
Yeah, and it doesn't look good on them. I'm not going to suggest they had anything to do with it, but I think it points more toward incompetence and just lack of, we've already covered, lack of knowledge and all that. And we sometimes they're embarrassed and they want to just push it under the rug or whatever.
Right. It's, ego is a hard thing to get over. But when you're in a public service position, you need to do what's best for the community. It's always the greater good, whether you're in first responders, police, fire, ambulance, healthcare, politics, even, you're supposed to serve the good of the people. And you can't let your ego get in the way of that. I mean, and I agree with you. It seems like maybe they know things were botched and it's embarrassing for them as a department to let others come in and just kind of take over, maybe.
Yeah, we see that in a lot of our cases that we're covering. That's why, because we cover so many unsolved cases. And, one could argue that's why part of the reason why so many cases are unsolved is because of botched police work. And we've seen that a lot.
Right. And I wonder if there was enough to get DNA evidence on anything. I mean, there probably wasn't, or if there was, they didn't collect much evidence. So I would almost assume that that's not a possibility, but you know, you'd be surprised at what you could find with so little if they were just allowed access to it.
Yeah, for sure.
This has me thinking about how you mentioned that all of the newspaper articles basically say the same thing over and over. And I think all three of us have said that, like, while doing this podcast, we've found cases that seem really interesting that we think would be great ones to tell our listeners. And then when we go to research, we find that some of these cases that are the most intriguing have all of the newspaper articles saying the same thing over and over, just like this one. And it makes me think there are a lot of cases like this where that happens.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, when we realize that, so, you know, the police can't reveal everything, and we get that. But like sometimes just with this case, it just seems like the things they're withholding don't make sense. Like, why? Like, what's the point? I don't feel like it was going to compromise anything.
Right. We're not asking to name names of suspects or anything like that, that you might have one, or even theories. We just basic information would be great.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I often wonder, because Judy's remains were mixed up with that little girl's, how did that compromise the autopsy and things? I mean, things like that should be on public record, because that has nothing to do with the crime. That is more a health and humanity issue. That should be in public records. And when I searched the DHHR, there is nothing on even a whisper that this ever happened. I mean, I would have to, like, you know, invoke the Freedom of Information Act probably to get access to that.
Why was there remains of someone else even there? Like, why were there remains of two people there?
I can partially answer that, but not specifically why they were clumped together. But when Judy's body was sent, around that same time, there was a family fire in the next county, in Jackson County. And so I wonder if everything was boxed up and sent at the same time, because the counties are so local. And maybe the coroner just sort of made the rounds that day or something, or they were sent. So that would be my theory to that, especially around here. The court, you know, not every county has their own coroner. So the state kind of comes and does rounds when they can, if that makes sense.
Makes sense. I just wanted to ask. I thought it was odd.
If we can get some circulation on this case and just get people to talk about it and share it on their social media, share the episode, talk about the episode, give Judy's family's Facebook page a like. It's called Justice for Judith Lynn Petty. And even circulate that, because it has all the details and contact information. That would be so helpful just to the family, even. Listen to that if you can. And again, if you have any tips for the family, you can reach out on their Facebook page or to the number that I gave earlier.